You know, it's crazy, like, you know, Tin Can Phone, it started in prison, you know, and when we came home, they kept, like, our first interviews and all of our first content in bondage. We had to start over, you know what I'm saying? We lost our mom and we lost Joe, but we gained Blue, Tin Can Phone.
Did that time and I bounced back. Had us in the beanies, now snap back. Boys in blue trying to snap back. Trying to make sure that my guys never go back. Ain't worried about the instas and the Snapchats. I'm worried about the homies on drugs. Close to really fast. It's messed up when you know the dealer and the buyer. Look him in his eyes, I can tell if he lying. Been locked up with gorillas in the lines. Yeah, respect to get you far and don't move around blind. Forget about the chow hall, I ain't waiting in line. Bust down on the bed, spread with the homies. Not no more, we on the streets waiting for him. Free such and such, free with you out. We all on cable talking it out. Me, Mike, and Blue and a couple of guests. Poppin' knowledge like petrol, who got the gas? Doing the work, trying to heal for my past. Politicking on the yard, trying to touch me a bag. Mike was on the yard with the hitters in the sav. Orange beanie on his head with the thing in the bag. Blue photo shoot fresh, sharp enough to cut a wrist. First day of school, coolin' ain't with the cuddling. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Tin Can Phone, yes, gang in the bitch. Mike, Blue, Queens, Misfit Audi, Tin Can Phone, episode 3, whole gang in this motherfucker. Blue, what's really happening?
What's up, man? How's it going, Queez? Oh, man, I'm just glad to be here. Always love that intro. And hey, Mike, how you doing, bud?
I'm doing pretty well. Today was long and hard, which we will jump into, but we're excited to have a guest joining us. Blue, why don't you introduce us to our guest?
Sure, man. This guy, we're going to be talking a little bit about working for yourself, but this man is doing it. And I used to sit next to him coloring with colored pencils, painting with paints, sitting next to my dude, Kirk, who's an amazing artist. He's a muralist. He's a musician. He's just a super interesting guy. He's the kind that can just bring what's in his mind out and just put it on paper or canvas or walls and just express himself in an amazing way. And he's my dude. So glad to have Kirk here joining us to talk about this sort of phenomenon within sort of the post-incarceral context of like trying to find your way and knowing that maybe doing it for yourself is the best way to do it. So Kirk, how you doing?
Great. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, this is, I think we've been doing this where in our show script here, we have, in this episode, the host will discuss the ever elusive American dream of being one's own boss. For men with a post-carceral life, this may be a form of salvation for many reasons, including avoidance of persecution in the workplace, freedom and access to a work environment that supports who they are now, or some as simple as being able to survive using a skill one has but is unable to be employed elsewhere doing, working for yourself. And Kirk, I know through our various conversations that you're endeavoring to push your creative self into the world in the way that you wish the world both could see you, but also ways in which there's need for. How's that going for you?
It's great. I think that I love being here with you guys because you guys are in my area and can appreciate, I guess, what I'm trying to do. And, you know, I've just got different components working at the same time. So I'm not very good at the business end of what I'm doing, but I created this program called Art Inside Out. And it just got off the phone with a guy today who I created while I was incarcerated, you know.
Just make sure you tell us what it is. Like I was thinking about, we've been talking about having you on the show since we started the show, and now you're here. And so we've talked about this many times, but I don't know that Queez knows. Queez, do you know what Art Inside Out is?
Yeah, I should explain it and what it is and stuff.
I've been following your work, Kurt. How you doing?
Thank you.
Adi. It's the Misfit.
Right.
I've been following your work through Blue Gallery, but I've never had a real...
Yeah, explain it for us.
Understanding of what it is.
Yeah.
This is Tin Can Phone. This is Misfit Audi. Kirk, first we would like to know, you said you created this program inside, right?
Yes,
so
sir.
First, I think it's important that you bring an understanding to our listeners of how this even came about with the idea and then finding the tools and resources from inside to create this entity that it is.
Yes, and thank you. You know, it wasn't easy, let's put it that way. But the Art Inside Out, what I was doing around 2017 is I was kind of reconfiguring my life, you know, and I've changed to be a better person many times, but change doesn't seem to work for me. You know, it's more of a, well, I call it my transformation, right? I take my body and actually move it to another part of life, man. So I was teaching art. I had some art classes going. I've been drawing since I was a little kid, pretty good at it. And then teaching art classes. And then I wanted to introduce some of the positive dialogue that I was learning. I mean, I read everything from the Bible to, you know, Wayne Dyer's 80s self-help books and stuff like that. Seemed like the 80s were kind of into that. But yeah, and so I just wanted to incorporate or add that to my art lessons, you know, some positive dialogue. Because when you're doing art, as you guys know, there's a lot of self inner dialogue, right, that you talk about. And, you know, a lot of that can translate over to life. I saw these connections between making your art good, making your life good, you know, and it's a lot of the strategies or mechanisms or whatever that you use to get your art better, you can use to get your life better. And I make these connections between art and life. I use the word sufficiency is one of my connections between art and life. And if you think about it, sufficiency is the way to be for me, because I used to strive for perfection, you know, when I was doing art. And then when I teach art, a lot of people expect to do this wonderful painting in their first try. And it's kind of a, you know, it's kind of a fantasy, really, is what it is. So,
yeah.
So I always tell them not to be too hard on yourself. And another category you don't want to be in is lack of effort. You say you want to be an artist, but you're not putting any work in, you know, that kind of thing. So the area of sufficiency is the area you should be in when you're learning art, because that's when you know you're making progress, you're easy on yourself, you know, you get these aha moments and you know you're going to get better and that sort of thing. And so isn't that how life is what I do with those connections, right? You know, instead of perfection and expecting all these things that are going to make you happy, that's not a good category to be in. Neither is lack of effort, where you're not trying, you know, you're not trying chasing your dream like I'm trying to do and stuff. Okay. So the area to be in life is sufficiency. That's when you're doing good. So
yes, sir. Just for a clearer understanding, you teaching art classes, this is why you're incarcerated.
Yes, sir.
Two-part question. What security of prison were you in teaching art classes? And what was the reaction of, let's say, the participants or the people who came to your class and the ones who you may have noticed wanted to come but couldn't fully detach from the lures of why you in that class or how you doing something different? If you could, one, just kind of explain where you were in prison, not necessarily the prison, but where you were mentally, what security prison you was in, and kind of your method of getting people to come to the art class, and the reaction of the people, the reaction of the ones that did come, and kind of what you seen in the ones who wanted to come but didn't have the strength to, in a sense.
So to answer your first question, I've been in USP Atwater, man. That I was teaching art in USP Atwater.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was taught art.
The feds, right?
Yes, sir. Yeah. USP. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I did 8 years in the feds. So
okay.
For, you know.
So. Yes, sir.
Then I've taught. Doesn't seem like you can get it going at minimums because people are, you know, it's always revolving and stuff. So, so OSP, I was teaching art and that kind of thing. But
okay,
I tell you, Quiz, the testimonies that I have and the support that I have for the program is just off the hook because, you know, guys want to do art, man. Mm-hmm. That is the, you know, that's what they got messed up with Pathfinders and all that other shit because, I mean, it's good stuff. Don't get me wrong, but good content and everything, but they're not making this connection, which is, I don't know, probably the most important thing about going to a program when you're locked up. You got to make the connection. So instead of guys sitting around the room, looking out the window, wanting to go to the yard or, you know, got all this other stuff going on, they want to be there because they want to do art. They want to make a card for their gal or they want to, everybody loves art, cards and all that stuff. So that's the hook that brings them in. You know, I get I've had some serious convicts in there and they've a couple of them broke down and cried, you know, while I was chatting with them after the class and stuff. So, but a lot of support from, you know, I've been doing it in recovery places out here too, drug and alcohol recovery places. And I don't know, it's just all around win.
Because you are teaching it now out.
Yes. Yeah, I have a public
program you're running as a cell, like you created the entity and now you're invited places to practitioner it.
Right. And Chris, when Chris was talking about, you know, how I got it going at EOCI, you know, it just started as a thought. And I was making a lot of notes. I'm always writing in those little, those little books and stuff. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With the wide lines on it, you know? So I started with telling a counselor, hey, I want to introduce some positive dialogue. Mm-hmm. And somebody told me along the way, you should create a curriculum for it. So there's three components of Art Inside Out, and they're equally important. The first thing, you know, we do art. We have art lessons. We have art exercises. Well, I'll ask them to draw the speed of sound, right? No words, just draw the speed of sound. Or walk like your favorite color. You know, then we have art lessons. And then we have a main art project that we do in the class that'll be done in the 12 weeks when the course is over. And yeah, so a bunch of art history, art lessons, that sort of thing. The second thing we do in Art Inside Out, equally important, is we go over these connections between art and life. Mm-hmm. I know that because I love art and I feel like I know how it works, that there's some parallels and some connections between making your life better and making your art better. And you're always trying to make your art better. So I just got to thinking I should always try to make my life better. So the word sufficiency, and then I just have a lot of things like problem solving. You know, you're always solving things in a painting and you can solve things in life type of thing. So, and then the third thing we do is we have a positive dialogue about these words that we know the definitions of, but we don't talk about them all the time, ever hardly. Ooh. So, but those words are forgiveness, kindness, honesty, trust, and we talk about them. I explain my thoughts on them and then they talk about them too. And it brings guys out to the real them, you know, so.
Yeah.
Some guys can go years without having positive dialogue on the inside.
I know. Centuries.
Amazing what you were able to create. And I think also the reason why it's so supported is because they actually saw, I don't know if you guys know this, they've seen like a manifest change in people, you know, like feeling better and behaving differently based on these things that Kirk has put in place. Like, I mean, really like having change facilitated through art is so huge. I know for me, it was like, there's no program for me. Kirk's stuff was so like dynamic on the inside. So many people wanted to do it. And he was having such success that they actually let him go into DSU, which is the disciplinary segregation unit. Some people call it the hole.
Mm-hmm.
And, our listeners may
bucket.
Know the shoe or the bucket, or segregation. You just never know, right? The movies lock you in a box by yourself. And it's not quite that way in Oregon, but it's a room by yourself, isolated. And this is a place where, I don't know, you used to be lucky if you could get a book.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually let Kirk, and this is unprecedented, go in there and teach a class. You know, the guys are shackled to the desk, but he's teaching his Art Inside Out class in the hole. I mean, this is amazing. So like, it's pretty, Kirk, just so you guys know, he's showing a picture on our little screen of him teaching a class in DSU and all the guys in their seg uniforms chained to desks, and everybody's looking, and everybody's like happy to be there and doing the class. Does anybody know how to stop that? The ding?
It might be I think you can turn do not disturb on your phone, and if everything's up to date, it'll actually do it on your computer, but it's fine. It's a feature. This is, I think, because this is a part of the conversation, right? Where Kirk was like, and it's interesting to hear it talked about in this context. It sounds like, I mean, and I've been hearing about it. It's great I've been hearing about it over like months and a year or more. So it's nice to have it like broken down for the audience in one, but I'm also have my own experience. We really get to hear the completeness of it. But it also, my understanding, Kirk, is, I mean, and I actually don't understand so hopefully by the end of this episode, I will. You said, and I heard you say this, and I know this, you say you struggle with the business part of your business, but I'm also, so you say that you are teaching it on the outside, like full-time, part-time, Are you looking for more? Are you just, yeah, I'm just curious how that part of it is functioning.
Yes, I mean, I'm always looking for more. You know, I was thinking today, I was talking to my Mary, my roommate, beautiful gal and good friend. And so, yeah, I think I know how to get more, you know, but I just haven't done it yet. And I don't know why. So, you know, what were you saying about as far as, yeah, the business side is, man, I, you know, people that create, I think, not everybody, you know, but you know how they say that they split it up like, you know, it's 60% creating and then 40% business or the other way around or something like that. I think, you know, for me, I would just want to create and then have somebody else handle the business, you know, and pay more for them to do it or something because I don't know what I'm doing. I mean, mm-hmm. I'm doing, you know, so.
Where are you teaching it now? I mean, you've mentioned it because you mentioned that you're like have a job. So in conversation with working for yourself, and I know that there's ways in which each of us are also exploring that, which I want to bring that in conversation with Kirk. But yeah, I'm just curious what that landscape looks like more conversationally. You've been giving us like the song and dance and the kitchen sink version. You're like, well, we got the acronym and the, but like, well, let's get conversational. Like, what is it like to be you and the ways in which you struggle with that or, you know, feel like you're aspiring towards success?
Well, you know, I thanks, Michael. You know, I really think that when I'm chasing this dream, and as an artist, since I was a little kid, I've been telling my sisters and brothers that I'm going to buy my house someday, you know, and all this stuff. But I didn't find what I really wanted to do until this Art Inside Out thing happened. And I began to get some confidence behind it and stuff like that. But it's a struggle for me in a lot of ways. I'm not doing great financially and all that stuff, but to, you know, just kind of get to your point, you know, a lot of people expect you, well, just go get a job anyway, you know, just go work at McDonald's or something like that. I just want to smash people like that because I mean, it's, you know, do not tell me that, man, because you know, I'm chasing a dream and you had a dream, you gave up on it and you're working at Freightliner, you know, you're making good money, but that's where money doesn't buy happiness for me, for sure. So but I'm always wanting to create and let somebody else handle the, I missed an important call the other day from New York and it was on Eastern Standard Time and I'm out here in the West. So yeah, just down to little things like that, I can't seem to figure out.
Sure. I mean, it's funny, like even Blue's computer is dinging, you know what I mean?
To say something, Blue. I'm supposed to ding.
Yeah. You know, I know Kirk, like we used to sit and talk about like the hours, like days, hours, weeks, and years that we put into our art, you know, like this time that maybe Quees like put into like rapping or just like expressing himself through poetry or whatever. We all had our thing that we figured like, this is how I'm going to like make use of this time. This is how I'm going to redeem this time in a positive way. And Kirk and I used to just talk about like, God, wouldn't it be cool if we could make a living at this? And what would that look like? How would we do that? And Kirk has every tool in the book. Like there's no way that a guy like Kirk, if anybody ever says, you know, go work at McDonald's, it's ridiculous. And obviously he's making this business that he has created with three modules and a, you know, workbook that somebody could do if it's self-directed, if they can't be around other people, like during COVID, like he has all that, but he could also paint your window like for nothing. You know, I mean, not for nothing, for money, but it would be easy for him. He's that good. Mm-hmm. So it's like the idea of that skill or his abilities being put on a shelf and being, you know, moving stuff around in a warehouse or making pizzas, I mean, that's like the story of so many people getting out of prison. The story is like, oh, you went there and learned how to fight fires? Well, now come here and make pizzas. Or you're an amazing artist? Well, why don't you chew this bubble gum? You know, it's like ridiculous, you know? And
that's,
go ahead.
And that's just something I did, you know, to get incarcerated. You know, it's not who I am. I mean, there's this mm-hmm. big pie there and you take that little piece of the pie. And that's where I did wrong things, et cetera. But man, what about the whole pie? You know, what about, you know, don't, you know, I always tell people that, yeah, I committed a robbery or whatever, but I wasn't born to be this evil malefactor that's not going to amount to anything at all. You know what I'm saying? So But, you know, the concept of Art Inside Out is this, really. When you're creating some Quiznos, you guys know when you're creating some, you're using more of a concentration than you normally use, you know, mm-hmm. just doing brushing your teeth or mm-hmm. driving down the road throughout the day. And so when you're in that moment, you pine and yearn for information to make your art the best and make mm-hmm. it better even than the next guy. So that is a good time to introduce positive dialogue, right? Because you're wanting information to make mm-hmm. your art look good and beautiful, or your music. And then so that is the best time to introduce anything, really. I mean, you could give them bad stuff and they're going to retain it and then use it later on. But and Art Inside Out is evidence-based, man. I just got that recently. I gotta say that, man, because, you know, that can get me to, you know, the people that think they're unreachable mm-hmm. or something. Mm-hmm. You know?
Mm-hmm. Just to piggyback off of what Blue was just speaking of with the job thing, I have most definitely been able to change my perspective, right? This is what I've figured out about the world and the state of the world where we live in right now, in our, you know, community-ish. And I learned this from my job, right? A lot of people really don't know. A lot of employers, a lot of what we will call, you know, we call them the normal people, like normal people, not, you know, but what they don't know. Like my boss, she happened to be a little motherly. You know what I'm saying? She happened to want to understand. I figured out that I was education to her because personally, not even about work, she always asked me like, why you react like that? Or why you do this have to do with prison or do this? And this is just a regular Caucasian woman who was raised with no ties to prisons or incarceration or anything. But at work, she found a way to educate herself through me, which allowed me to look like they really don't know. Like they really, really don't know. What we do though is we have probably one of our uncles or one of our great ancestors who did time told us that, well, once you come home, this happens because that's happened in that time. And believe me, it do happen. Like we do get discriminated against, not because of race, but because of history. We are, and I say this in one of my songs, I am my record. Because no matter what my name is, when I go put my name on that paper, the record is what they're going to look at. So we are our record. I do get that. But if you change the perspective, I went in there thinking, well, I'm not going to get this job. Like, oh, what am I? And I told them, I went to the prison. I did this. And just like Kirk said, I was young. I made a mistake. Like, no. I didn't even tell them I made a mistake. This is how I was living. I did that. This is how I was living at that time. This was my way of income. Like, I couldn't go to school. I had to break in the house. My daddy wasn't there. Hey, like, that's just how this go. But I told her, for the simple fact that me being here right now, even applying for this job, shows the difference. Because I can't tell you one of my homeboys who would even put in an application. You know what I'm saying? So what I realize is people are recognizing the trauma of the broken system. People are actually, like, some states, I don't know about Oregon, but some states, they get funding for every ex-con they hire. So anybody with a conviction and they hire them, the job will get funding for that. I don't know if
you in Oregon, if you stay with them for 6 months, they'll get money for that.
Yep. Okay. Yep. So, and that shows that it's being recognized that mental health comes with incarceration one way or another, which leads me, I just wanted to speak on that about the job thing because I'm experiencing a different, every job I apply for since I've been home, I got it. And I've had like 5 different jobs and I only work them for like 2-3 weeks and I quit. And I showed them exactly why that stigma came up because I couldn't, because of my trauma, I couldn't hold on to a job because I knew I wasn't doing the right job, which leads to Kirk. Did art save your life?
Oh, wow. You know, I was thinking about that the other day. If I didn't have art, you know, where would I be or what would I be doing? And I guess I'd be working at Freightliner someplace and, you know, maybe doing something else. I just gave up being a rock star playing music like a couple weeks ago, you know. Wow, that's scary even to think about that because all the time that I've done.
So look, think about this. Have you seen your art save somebody else's life?
I think the program has brought, when you were talking about perspectives, changing your perspectives, that's one of the things that I have in my book because, you know, Anna Demenham, Blue, you guys know Anna, you know, she's a thought leader. She was explaining one time that, and she's from Britain and she had this clear glass and with hot water in it. And she was saying, it's, you know, life, your perspective can be very clear as you look through the glass. And but when you dip the bag in, it gets murky, you know. And so she says, or your perspective can be this way, and kind of a good way to describe it. But yeah, man, when you said change your perspective, you know, it's not that hard to do. It's hard to do.
It's
but
unlearning.
It's not that hard.
Unlearn. Yeah. You have to unlearn.
Change. I mean, there's a lot of really interesting layers to that. And it's kind of what I'm wearing. I literally, before I came to the recording, in my work, working for myself, I'm all over the place. Mm-hmm. So that's like an interesting layer. And even when talking about the show, I talk about that everyone being able to get paid is through my labor administrating it. Mm-hmm. And I like sort of wish I wasn't doing that just because I don't want to do that. But the magic of doing that is what, you know, is actually what I want the effect to be, is for you all to be getting compensated for your time. Like, yes, and the platform, but the compensation first, actually, because the topic that we're talking about is the struggle that I'm already trying to pertain to. It happens to be a creative project, but I'm working towards the struggle that we're discussing as a group. And so there's that. But one of the other things, I like ran into this community center, is like a community school, which is the place where I want to put those portraits blue that we have. And I kind of got called in. They were like, oh, we're going to try you out. I'm like, we'll pay you or whatever. It was very confusing, but I'm interested in working with them. They were talking about fugitive pedagogy, which is like, you know, you're in a situation where you've been oppressed and chastised, and now they're like, learn. And someone used the question, they're like, what does it mean to learn, like when your whole life is upheaved, you know? And so they're like, trauma prevents your ability to absorb the information. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, so that, and then we're talking about that with kids, and I'm in this situation, I'm also thinking all about all the work I do with you guys and like the things I've been exposed to in that situation. So I'm like, yeah, I'm about all this stuff. And so I drove across the bridge to Vancouver and went to a school. It was really sight unseen. Me and the person I was with, who I just met this over the weekend, she didn't even know she was walking in on. And it was like, like 10 kids. There was like 4 or 5 teachers. They were like, everyone was milling around. And after a while, we were kind of like, so what's going on? And they're like, yeah, go. And we're like, what is happening right now? And so it was interesting, because like I was almost on a job interview sort of, because I was like, I have no idea. This woman has a contract, all this stuff. She's working for herself. So anyway, long story short, I kind of was like power bottom facilitating, where I was like, so why doesn't everyone introduce themselves? And like through this process, we found out that they're like totally don't want to be there, which was obvious, but like they didn't sit, they were like hyper nonverbal, like very like, no engagement. And so like we did a pass thing where you pass the thing to say the name, and people were just like passing it without saying their name. They were just like not doing it. And so it's interesting too, thinking about Kirk's premise of like, this is proven, like the person who's like, no, I will not do this. And it was interesting too, because we were in the room, because this in system was kind of like, these guys will solve it. And one of the reasons I brought that up is because that just happened. I like drove from Vancouver here to like record. But in this conversation, it's kind of fascinating, because we're talking about the experience of guys inside. So not only did Kirk like forge a lot of this almost mystical perception of reality, where like if you are feel like you're gone beyond return, you may be able to like return due to this. And he's struggling to like get it placed in action. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, there's rooms full of people who like don't think there's any return. And so it's just this like an interesting premise where all guys, so we're like, each of you even are very lucky that you're like, yeah, I walked in and said, I'm struggling with this, but I'm better now. Let's get this job. And there's a bunch of guys who are still in this traumatized state. And they don't know how to navigate the system. And even as guys who can navigate the system, you still need these like, well, can you spin 10 plates? 5 is not enough. Can you spin 10? Then it'll really work out. And so there's, and like, you know, whatever. So I just wanted to introduce that into the conversation.
I don't have no sympathy, Mike. Like, it's hard for me to like, I used to believe that, bro. Like, I really used to believe that. But like, I seen a lot of homies come home and like, bro, gonna put in applications. Oh, bro, like, you know, like it really be the person, like we, let me tell you what we do. And this is, and the internet has created us to do this. We represent and we carry our trauma. Like people use it as a crutch. You know what I'm saying? People use it as a crutch. That's nice. Like, I was in prison. I'm not going to get a job. Put in one application. You don't get it. Now it's confirmed that because you was in prison, not because you didn't qualify, not because you didn't graduate, my guy, he graduated. But because you was in prison, it's the reason you didn't get the job. Yes, there's discrimination. Yes, I know that there's discrimination against ex-cons, the convicted ones. You know, I'm a rock with the convicted ones every time, but I lived it. You know what I'm saying? I literally lived it. So I cannot continue to be a witness of or bag up, like, because I've been in prison, I can't get it. Bruh, listen to me. My boy Gus, shout out my boy Gus. He owns his own store in Portland. He was in prison with me. My boy St. Louis, he owns two businesses. He was in prison with me. These guys all came home, worked, saved a bag, and now they're business owners. You know what I'm saying? So for me to see not just one or two, or like I got like five homies that was Mike at Columbia River with us, right, that I could name that has came home. And these are real gang member, like you, Mike, you know who I was dealing with in the pen.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And these dudes are business owners now. So once you become a witness, I can't be like, yeah, bro, you went to the pen, so you ain't gonna get the job. No, what we do is we cripple ourselves. We cripple ourselves. We say, well, my uncle told me this and my brother told me this. I put in one application and I didn't get the job. I ain't gonna never get a job, bro. Mike, what's this? I'm gonna go back to what I know best. That's the failure right there. What I'm going back to what I know best, that's the failure. That's our problem. The convicted ones, that's our problem. We have to lose that going back to what we know best mentality, because we come home with that. I'm gonna put the little job in, but bro, that don't work, bro. I'm going what I know best. You are already preparing to go back to what you know best.
Yeah, you already got one foot back in the door of the spot, you know, and I think that...
But hold on real quick, Kirk, hold on real quick. I say that to say we get away with it. And Mike, it's people like you who believe in us, and people like Blue, and people that believe, because Blue, you know, because you've been to the forgotten spot. But we have people who believe that we're putting our best efforts forward and we're getting rejected. And it's people like Mike who put their neck on the line. People like my wife who put her neck on the line. And me knowing I didn't get at my all. I probably forgot my social security on that application. I ain't never filled out an application before. So, but we have people who accept us because they know the trauma of being in prison. So when we come home and we make these little missteps and we like, oh, I was in prison, it's not going to work. And people accept it, now that becomes our habit. You know what I'm saying? You got people like Kirk who did all that time in the feds and the state and came home and, you know? So, like, you know, I agree that...
I mean, inside, God created the formula and the particular formula.
Blue, so he's a witness. He's
yeah,
a
I just want to jump
I mean,
in
we're
on
witnesses. We're witnesses to that. So I can never agree with when you go to jail, you can't get it. I'm not letting my people slide with that. Y'all got to step it the fuck up, bro. Like, I'm not letting y'all get away with that.
I think that, like, Quizo, here's the thing. I agree with you, but I think that there's, like, a few things. There's the obstacles we put in our own ways that can be real. Mm-hmm. Like, our imaginations can manifest in a way that can be crippling, right? Yes. Like, that's hard, right, to come through that, or to risk judgment, or to, like, worry about, like how you're going to navigate the world. And then there's like the things like, I mean, Kirk, when you went in, was there a smartphone?
No,
you know what I'm saying? Like, people don't understand, like, if you haven't filed taxes in a decade and you get out and that's part of like what happens, it's not that filing taxes is the hardest thing in the world. Mm-hmm. There's a formula for it. But I think that there's things that we kind of like shut off. I think there's things that can be turned off over time. Maybe even aspects of our part of ourselves that could be really good skills that we turn off in a way. They become rusty. They get dust on them.
But Blue, people wasn't filing taxes before prison though. You don't file taxes, on dope money.
No, I hear you. I'm not talking about
trying to file taxes.
But I love that you said all those guys are business owners, though, because that's one of the things we're talking about. And like, why are they business owners instead of working for somebody else? It's because there's a level of freedom and autonomy within that. There's knowing that at the end of the day, that to use a nice little prison vernacular, that you're going to be like,
all good.
Stand on your own two feet, right? Like you are like responsible and nobody's going to like fire you. Like, and you, like, if you put forward a good product and you do a good job, most of the time it's going to work out, because there is, like you said, we're acknowledging that there's discrimination and that there is against people from a post-incarceral context. And we're also saying that, like in Portland, like Portland wants to welcome people back. Portland wants to like see you and like basically like take you in and hug you and be like, I got you. Like, I see you. Like, we know that the system's, you know, there's injustice. We know that there's struggle. And we know even if there wasn't, you paid a price, you know.
Hey man, they might know through 10 can phone, man. Hey, to the incarcerated, man, they hear you, man. Portland hear you, man. 10 can phone got you, man. Hey.
Right?
Yeah. One of the things when I was trying to get the program going, I had so many people that were for it, but man, I had this, you know, this flooding of this deluge of people that were saying, no, you can't do that. Mm-hmm. I was saying that to myself, you know, believe in them, like Chris was saying, you know, you get domesticated and learn from your uncles and all that stuff. So really didn't have a lot of confidence going into it, but the concept is real. And that's why I got, you know, the Evan Space thing there. Cause you know, just art therapy in and of itself, it really, really works. But, you know, the trauma that Chris was talking about earlier, about that we go through as growing up and stuff. I had something really crazy happen to me when I was a kid. Not worse than anybody else's, but, you know, it affected me at the right time. I was at the right age, I think. And that, you know, when you grow up in a toxic environment, I think it's funny sometimes people say, oh, don't you want to be like how you used to be, or, you know, give up on the dope and so you can get back to normal. What if normal was messed up, right? You know, and so maybe you don't even want to do that. But that count, you know, I just got a job at the county as a peer specialist, actually. I can't believe it still, but the vet, you know, the vetting process, when they examine you at the county, it's like, man, I'm under a microscope, man. I thought helicopters were flying by for a while, but you know, you're right, man. You get to thinking that way and then you won't even apply. Right. So I took the step and just, you know, I didn't think I was going to get it, like you're saying. And, but they want people with empirical knowledge, people been there, done that. Mm-hmm. And the lady said that she could tell that I lead with empathy. I don't know how she got out of that or out of our interview, but,
pretty articulate.
Cool. And it's, well, thank you. And it's cool being, you know, they need male staff too. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I got to, you know, I shouldn't say that, but
yeah, you probably find this tin can phone.
Hey,
he's then, got a tin can phone language.
I also wanted to say that the program has more people on the waiting list to get into it. Currently, I just spoke with Brian Clark, the CRM at Eastern Oregon Correctional Institute. Now, and he told me that the only two programs that are going on now that they're going to bring back and that people are want back is GOGI. I think it means getting out to getting in or something like that. It's a pretty cool program, kind of like Pathfinders, and Art Inside Out, right? So he's going to make sure that those two function and do well. But I've had more people on my waiting list to get in my program than all the other programs combined, and I'm not Inside, bragging about it. I'm just saying, it works, you know.
Okay, it works. It's okay.
Hey, this the middle of the show. This the middle of the show. This is where we do Misfits Wise Words. Before we get into Misfits Wise Words, I want to say what they was doing, Kurt, was projecting their fears onto you. And this is what we have to be careful with. People will project their fears onto you. And that's why they told you you wasn't going to be able to start that program. That's because they couldn't see it. Small thoughts for small minds. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes you got to see past your nose. And sometimes when our friends say they're going to do something and we don't believe, we project like, oh man, I don't think he could do it. I don't know if he could do it. Are you sure you can? Don't project your fears on me. I know I could do it. That's why I thought it. And if you could think it, you can achieve it. You know what I'm saying? So we have to be careful with people, and it's not on purpose. I'm just scared for you. I'm just scared. So I project the fears onto you. It's not me trying to ruin your, you know, but just off of that, today I feel like it's only fitting for Wise Words. I just want to do, and this is off the head. I didn't make this up. I didn't write. This is what I feel from this episode. To unslave. We have to unslave ourselves. We get ourselves, we put ourselves in these places, and we become slaves to these things, these places, certain people, beliefs, brands. We have to unslave. We have to unlearn. In order to relearn, we have to unlearn. Me and Michael speak on this all the time, the snake analogy. We eat and suck in everything that we learn as kids. As we grow, we shed. We have to shed and leave things behind in order to grow, right? We have to unlearn. The ultimate key is unlearning. The problem with unlearning is admitting that you was taught wrong, admitting that you've been living wrong. It's so hard to admit those things. It's so hard to say that my mom taught me or that my dad. And it's because it's not that it was wrong. It was only right for that time, right? Once you can unlearn all these traumas that we just talked about, then you can step into becoming you. Because the old me, gang banging, cocaine, gun toting, jail was home. People like me, I always said when I was on the streets, I was on vacation. I'm just here to see my family. And I got to go back home. And I always went back home to prison, right? I had to unlearn. Like, it wasn't cool. I was speaking. I was manifesting that. You know what I'm saying?
That particular point is interesting. I mean, the premise has come up a few times on the show. But what you're talking about now is, like, you had been socialized or otherwise behaviorally programmed that the culture was normative. And that's why you're talking about unlearning. And it reminds me again of these kids that I was with earlier today, especially being young. And it's funny because I brought up CRCI in the classroom with them when they were being like hella nonverbal. And we were like, you could do anything. They were just like, nothing. It's like, all right, well, we kind of filled that space with some thoughts. But I mean, one of the things I was thinking earlier about this situation, and it relates to what you're saying now, is they were young in a way where they also were having these traumatic events, houselessness, all the stuff they could be dealing. I mean, they have no skills. They're like forming. And it's funny because I said this to them. I talked about CRCI and how we did they didn't want to be there. Like the kids, they were being forced to be there. But we were in this situation together and we were able to enter this portal where anything is possible. And what do you want to do? And that then we like reframe the project to be like the artist in residence. But, you know, I said to them that when I was working in the prison, often I would feel like this is like working with young people. And I felt like that was like a patronizing thought. But the way I said this exactly the same to them is that working in this room is exactly like working with folks in prison. Mm-hmm. And the overlap is just that they're in a sensitive situation. And that, like, by being a human and being in a sensitive situation, they need a certain level of care and tenderness in order to develop the skill or to unlearn and all these things. Mm-hmm. But the human machine, biocomputer, is like programmed to like mess it up and then get anxious and be uncomfortable and reject and disconnect. And I'm not going to do the application. And mm-hmm. But the inclination to unlearn is anti-intuitive or whatever for the human computer.
Unlearn. I love unlearn.
One second, too, because I had a conversation with somebody who, because I used the words enslaved to brands. I want to make this perfectly clear on 10 Can Phone what this means. Low income, work two jobs, 2 weeks, you get your check. You go buy Jordans, your favorite shoes, right? Enslaving is you work for less than nothing. You work for almost nothing, right? We work and we'll go spend our money, our very, very, very last, on a pair of shoes where the material is worthless, almost nothing. And we do it repeatedly. That's enslaving ourselves to a brand. I'ma just work and spend my all on this one thing that really has no value to it. You know what I'm saying? So for those who may have, you know, not understood what enslaving to different things mean, because slave is such a sensitive word that when you hear it, you automatically get just a certain thought. I just want to be perfectly clear that it's only when we make ourselves arrested development. It's arrested development. You arrest your development.
I mean, I think arrested development is like a strong awareness and even I learned what that term was later, and it's funny because it pertains outside of prison, but like this form of development. And that's that thing I was talking about recently, fugitive pedagogy, which I just learned about 4 days ago, but is actually even tied very closely to the Black American experience, where it was illegal to know how to read. Mm-hmm. And so education is messed up. And then it's a lot of people happening for everyone, like, and different like teachers in different places. You know, everyone is like, all the students are experiencing trauma. And so then that's where that question came of, what does it mean to learn when you're in the room and you're like hyper traumatized? But the other thing I wanted to ask Blue about, because Blue, you like often, you are working for yourself, sort of. What are the kind of challenges or successes you've seen related to that? And actually, I was going to call you in because I just submitted a proposal where you're on it, but I did it. You know, we are doing it together, and I'm excited actually to have you on the team. But the level of it, you know, you had to fill out the stuff and all the things were just like, oh, Blue will be good for it. But is a thing that I know is like not your favorite part of the process.
Right. You know, I think just to comment real quick on what Quees is talking about, because it's so powerful. And I love wisdom from Quees, and that we have that part of the show. But it was actually the exact thing I was thinking about in terms of Kirk, which is that when Kirk realized his value, that's when he was able to help these other people make a change in their own life. It wasn't until Kirk said, and he said this to me, and where this is tin can phone language, he said, I'm not right. a piece of shit. Right. He said, Kirk's not a piece of shit. He said, yes. And he learned, I have value. I have a purpose. And then he goes in and he teaches a class, which lets people actually see themselves in a totally different setting than prison, right? They're in there, they're doing art and talking about positive things. Like, and then you get to see yourself as an artist or somebody who's doing this thing that's totally alien to that sort of experience and community. So I think that's the most powerful thing about his program. For me, I'm a contractor and I'm an artist, and I do that. That's what I do. And I get to use some of my talents, and oftentimes I'm making things, and oftentimes I'm working with people or connecting people, but I am a contractor. So in the end of the day, I work for myself. And
contractor has like a construction business vibe. Is that what you were talking about?
No. It just means that I don't have a formal job. I'm a freelance guy. I do have hours that are dedicated to certain companies, but for the most part, I had to kind of like navigate into this. And when I first got back to Portland, I was working jobs like, you know, taking paint off the side of a tugboat, or like working in a mill, or like, you know, like, that is that even a job? Like, it feels like something made up. But then I was doing industrial painting and carrying around, you know, 28-foot ladders, 30-foot ladders. And I'm not a spring chicken anymore. It's tough. It's tough to do that type of work outside in the winter. And you know, people can do it, but it takes a toll. And I decided that I wanted to try to put the skill that I had put so many hours and so much energy into to work for me. And I had started to do that early on, and actually did a really cool campaign for wage equity in Portland that was a victory actually for a union campaign. And I did all these portraits in colored pencil, which is like the medium of the people inside, right? Like, there's so many things you can't get. I was lucky to be able to paint and do woodworking and things like that, and even welding in that context. But most of the time you just had colored pencils or graphite, and that was like the
Prismacolor, man.
Yeah. So you become an expert in that if that's what you choose to do, right? Now, some guys just draw the same thing over and over. But for me, it was like sometimes I'd be up at 8 a.m. and in bed at 11, you know, and doing art that whole time. So yeah, for me, it's like finding my way, recognizing like, if I do work for myself, I don't have to like jump through other people's hoops. I don't have to put myself at risk in that way.
Are you doing art full time?
I do art, and I manage a art community and work with people, and basically try to create space for other people to kind of follow whatever.
You were incredible.
Thanks, buddy.
You're incredible, Blue. You know, we used to have these conversations, Blue and I. I remember a lot of them, but one of the cooler ones was, you know, we decided that we're going to do art every day. And when we're tired of doing art, we're going to do some more art, you know. And I can't say I didn't believe him. You know, I believed him, but he's definitely proven that over and over again, and it's really cool. You know, I belong to this Justice Arts Coalition thing, and it's pretty cool. And I really appreciate what Michael does, because, you know, the reason why the program's going so well is it's coming from a person that has lived a life, right? I've been there, done that type of thing. It's why I got the job, really. And so, you know, Michael's, you know, I don't know his criminal background or his history, that sort of thing, but it's people like you, Mike, that, man, you know, just don't get burned out, you know, because
that is
know,
not true.
I said that is not true.
I get burned out all the time, well, trying actively not to burn out. And I think it's interesting too. I was in this classroom and I said something like, I mentioned working in a program, and then later it's like, I was in prison, because I just say that, like, because I was in prison with you, you know, I was like inside of the prison. And then one of them was like, you were in prison? And I was like, well, you know, I said, I actually love never specifying. I often talk about it with other adults. And I was like, yeah, I was in prison and we did this. And I just like, don't try to make it more clear. But it is interesting. I do get burnt out. And I think even this, so this room of kids, it's like a perfect, it's all wrapped in, right? And I was on the phone with a friend driving from Vancouver to Portland to get here in time. And they were like, oh, I hope I'm not burdening you. I'm like, no, it's cool. Like, it's like warming up for the show or whatever. But also is like, I was working when I was in the room with the kids, and I'm technically working now. And in both, I'm kind of choosing to be in that place. And it's interesting because the person who invited me to be there is willing to pay me to be there. But so I can spend time earning money being there. And it's for an earnest reason. Like I think those kids, I mean, there's like a bunch of adults in there, so it's not like me being there or not being there is like going to make or break it. However, it is interesting, like starting to be there, like I noticed in the room it was like their second day ever meeting each other, and like the whole program and the shape of it was weird when we walked in. It was like not a lot of structure, and they are needing that in a way. They also have like structure has failed them and they are rejecting structure. But now the same way they are inside out exists is it needs a pathway for them. And so kind of the question being posed to me is like, hey, do you want to build this pathway? And I'm interested. However, like just driving over the bridge into Vancouver was like this interesting thing. It's like, well, I already have a few communities I'm working in. Do I want a whole new community and a whole new room of people to be depending on me when I already owe a bunch of communities and rooms my capacity? And so even though this is for money and it's like up my alley, I'm still ruminating. Again, it's fresh, but you know, I think we all are faced with these positions of needing to like navigate. And I think I don't know for you guys' sake, but I was thinking about as a host of the show and thinking about this concept, like I work for myself, and again, on the phone with my friend and coming here, I was like, you know, I don't love administrating the show because I love administration, but in developing relationships with you guys and learning both that the platform has value to this community and that also a paycheck has value to people who are working within a context where they don't always have agency over where they can work or be working or be getting income from. So I like, you know, I'm sacrificing, and I think everyone does administration and everyone's doing their taxes. So I'm not like trying to escape that entirely, but I think I am not also dissimilar from Kirk, where I wish someone was just administrating this for me and I got to be doing the creative parts of it more regularly. But in any case, we're at the point where folks might want to contribute their final thoughts before we dial it in. Kirk, you want to go first? Has this aroused anything for you? Is there any last thoughts you'd like to give to our audience?
Absolutely. You know, art really goes into two different areas, right? In my sense, and I think I read this, I want to give credit to, but it goes into the area of aesthetics and it goes into the area of what they call utilitarian, right? The usefulness of art. And that's where people make signs and create things to bring people in. And, you know, it's useful, right? But, and then there's the aesthetics, you know, it looks good. It makes things look beautiful and that kind of thing. And I see, you know, a group here tonight that works in both areas. And so my art inside out is my usefulness part of art. And then I love, you know, doing a mural and doing portraits and stuff like that too. Developing my own style, because the best compliment an artist can get really is somebody that recognizes your style, I think, besides a nice little paycheck. But yeah, so, but this group that I belong to is really a bunch of people that haven't been incarcerated. And like Chris was talking about, you know, you gotta have somebody, not a suit and tie, come into prison, you know, and tell you or suggest things to you. It's got to be somebody that's been there and done that, for sure. Because, you know, I struggle with living in fear, to be honest with you. And I'm not scared of the boogeyman or, you know, lions and tigers and bears and that kind of thing. But I'm scared all the time about not messing up, man. And it follows me around like this malaise and this cloud that I'm trying to shake, man, because we are valuable. And I'm valuable to my community, you know, all that stuff, but I'm valuable to myself. And I want to unlearn, man, because when you grow up in a toxic environment when you're a kid, it's proven that it affects you later on. So, you know, I'm not going to use that as an excuse, but it's a fact, man. You know, some things happen to all of us and we're all important. You know, when Blue was talking about that, you know, I'm not a piece of crap. In my class, what I was doing is I would talk kind of softly and I'd say, you know, you guys got to consider not doing this anymore. And because you're important and you got to quit feeling like a piece of shit. And then I slam my hand on the table and these guys just kick back and it hits them, man, because you're not a piece of crap. So the water got the.
I love it.
Maybe I'll thought, Blue. And Grease. Yeah, final thought. If you're an employer and you're looking at people who are coming to you that have been incarcerated, try to see the skills and the person sitting there as opposed to a list of transgressions that they may have not done. And I think it's an opportunity to get somebody who may live their life to a higher standard, who may hold themselves to a higher standard because they know that it's important and they've been through stuff. And I think, people have to do some catch up. Like they might have to learn how to use a smartphone or the Google Cloud. I mean, some of those things are
learning curve. Google Docs, it's for you.
And you got to figure it out. But even though there's those like learning curves, that doesn't negate the value of those people. So maybe think about that in terms of like a call to action. And I think Portland wants that. So it's just kind of like reiterating.
Yeah.
Wonderful. I lose the I'm gonna go back to what I know best mentality. You will never be successful as long as you carry that. Kirk, thank you for being here on Tin Can Phone. It was a pleasure. It was an honor. I can't wait to work with you in the future.
Sure.
You know, you forever family. Whenever you want to pop in, just let us know you here. Man, Tin Can Phone from the inside out. It ain't gonna get no realer than this. We stripping the blues, stripping the colors. We do it for the ones on the inside. This your boy, Misfit Adi. This is Tin Can Phone. This is the motherfucking bang. Boom.
1. You were listening to the Tin Can Phone podcast, where you can hear about the influence incarceration has straight from the sources. We tell the stories from the inside out. So make sure to check us out on cable community radio every first Tuesday at 10 a.m. You can also check us out on Spotify, Apple, and anywhere you love to catch your podcast. And make sure to give us a follow over at tincanphonepodcast.com. And follow our Instagram at tincanphonepodcast. This Misfit Adi signing off. Hey.